What's going on, guys? Alex Pardo here, coming to you with another masterclass episode number 230 on the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What's going on, guys? I got my boy Nathan Brooks on today's masterclass for you. And guys, just so you have a little bit of a background and some context as to who Nathan is, highly, highly successful investor out of the Kansas City market. This year, his team is going to do about 150 fix and flips. And they also provide turnkey investment properties to clients in about seven different countries, which is really, really cool. They sell retail. They sell on the MLS. So not only do they have a wholesale part of their business, fix and flip, but they also have a retail side of their business with just a bunch of full-time realtors, marketing coordinators, transaction coordinators. And they're on pace to do about $20 million or so this year, 2018. And really, Nathan's goal is $100 million over the course of the next 5 years. So guys, on today's episode, you know, we're going to get into and jam on some really cool things as far as leadership, being the visionary. We talk about a little bit about rental portfolios, questions to ask property management companies to make sure that you're getting in bed with the right one. And we kind of go on a little bit of a rabbit trail as far as, just what it means to be leadership. And we bring up some really cool analogies that I think can really give you a better perspective as to what it means to become a better leader. So I'm really excited about the episode. I hope you get a lot out of it. So let's dive right into it. Mr. Nathan Brooks, my boy, what's going on, man?
Alex, what a pleasure, brother. Thanks for having me on here.
Dude, can't tell you how excited I am about having you on the podcast here. So guys, just so you have a little bit of an idea, Nathan and I haven't even known each other that long. We met at a mastermind, several months back. And then a couple of months ago, we were actually hanging out together at the IMN Single Family Conference in South Beach. Really, really cool experience. Got to hang out on a yacht from a mutual friend of ours and got to know each other on a more personal level. And the last day, like before we started recording here, we were just talking about how we grabbed lunch at a place called Sushi Samba on Lincoln Road in South Beach. And Nathan, what would you say, man? I feel like we probably took down like 12 rolls or something, 12 sushi rolls.
It had to be, they just kept coming. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know if you could even quantify the amount. I think they had to start using like the scales and more weight instead of so the number of rolls.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised because I'm not a big dude. You're a pretty big dude, but you are like a bottomless pit of sushi rolls, man. It was pretty impressive.
I could put it down, man. But the conversation certainly helped. We just kept talking and we just kept eating, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, actually, and I think that's so that's why you're here. Is after that conversation, I remember I reached out to you and I said, dude, I would love to have you on the podcast. You have a tremendous amount of value to add. You have a business that's rocking. And it's grown by leaps and bounds from what you shared with me at that conference. So guys, on today's episode, so Nathan runs a turnkey operation and he's got a rental portfolio. He does fix and flip. He does it all, right? And one of the things I think we're really going to focus on this particular episode is property management companies. How do you manage a rental portfolio? What types of questions you want to ask your property management company? Because again, him operating a turnkey business, which in my opinion is no easy task. There's a lot of moving parts to that business. He's got that really dialed in. And then we're also going to talk about what it means to be the visionary of your business and go from there. So I think this episode is going to impact a lot of people, especially if you have aspirations of growing a rental portfolio and you're just not sure where to start, or if you already have an existing portfolio. I think Nathan has a lot of things he can share with you that can really help you dial that in even more. So Nathan, man, I don't want to take too much of your thunder, but kind of give people a little bit of an overview, just briefly, how you got started in the business and what the business looks like today.
Thanks again. And thanks again for having me on here. And I really appreciate it a lot. So I've been in real estate for 10 plus years and kind of on and off in the beginning. and thought I was really, really crushing it, and was crushed in the, you know, 08, 9, 10, and, you know, just had to make a decision whether I wanted to come back after it, you know, take those lessons I'd learned and apply them, or, you know, kind of take defeat. And so my choice was to get back after it. And so, you know, 2012, I believe it was 2012, 2013, I bought my first house post bankruptcy, and, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16, did stuff on and off. And I met my business partner, David, in 2015. And in 2016, we did, I believe, 16 flips. In 17, we did 74-ish. And this year, we're on pace to be in the ballpark of, you know, 150 and, you know, 20 plus million in sales. So,
bro, that is unbelievable. So I guess let me kind of start there, because, you know, I feel like I would be failing the audience if I didn't ask like the obvious question, at least the one that comes to my mind. How did you go? I think you said the number was 15, 16 flips to then 60 something or 70 something. And then now you're doing the kind of volume you're doing. Like, how did you achieve that exponential growth in the business year over year?
Well, let me tell you that there's a lot of suffering involved with those choices too. But you know, I think if I would have gone into it and thought, hey, I'm going to double our business or triple it the first year, and then, you know, double it again over year the next year, you know, I think, you know, you and I would have, we, like, listen, Nathan, this is not a good idea. But when you when we look back and kind of postmortem the question, I think what happens was, if you're clear enough on what the goal looks like, the other pieces come together. It just doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be very clear. So, for instance, you know, flipping 10 houses a month is not that hard, or buying 10 houses a month is not that hard, but it's putting all the pieces together.
Absolutely.
You might have a process that runs okay for two or three flips, but when you it's just like a car. In using example like of a car, and you jump in your Ford Taurus, you know, it might redline at, you know, 4,500 RPMs, and if you push that gas pedal, you can only go so fast before you break that engine. Mm-hmm. Versus getting in a Ferrari, you know, and you can push that gas pedal and it'll do, you know, 10,000 RPMs or whatever it is. So, you know, did we build a, you know, comfort sedan, or did we build a Ferrari that we could ramp up? And so, in many places, we found that, hey, we hit the gas pedal and we realized we were not able to sustain that, or mm-hmm. maybe the rehabs weren't good enough, or maybe we bought more houses and we didn't have the data on how many they're coming out. So the more operationally sound and aware you are of your business as it grows, in asking questions of your business, like, what is it supposed to look like this month, this quarter, this year, revenue, you know, acquisitions, the more clear you're able to actually execute on scaling that.
I love that you went there, and that's a powerful analogy that you use, because I can really see the visual that, you know, I guess, you know, let's assume that somebody has the vision of what they want their business to look like. They understand their purpose. They have their core values, why they operate, you know, the reason they do what they do. What's, in your opinion, Nathan, like the fine line or the balance between knowing when to speed up versus slowing down? Because, like, let's say, for example, the vision of my business is to do, let's just use that number that you threw out, 10 deals a month, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But let's say my business and the infrastructure, my systems, my team, let's say we're not at a point where we can achieve, you know, 10 deals a month, at least without the wheels not falling off. So, like, what's that fine line between, you know, the vision and actually being able to have the systems, the infrastructure set up so that you can achieve and realize that vision? You get what I'm asking?
Yeah, I get it. And I want to make sure before we hit that, and I think it is a perfect question, that you hit vision and you hit, you know, assuming that the vision and the why and all those things, and those are huge assumptions too, right? So I think a lot of times what happens is people jump into something where, hey, I want to do 10 deals a month, or I want to make, you know, 20 grand a month, or whatever it is, but they haven't done all the previous steps. So what you said is exactly right. You have to already have done that.
That's right.
So what does this thing look like when it's done? And then, And then if you can answer that, first of all, should you even be doing 10 deals? Because if your goal was say 20,000 or 30,000 or whatever it is a month, and you're already, you know, say you're making 20,000 or 15,000 and you only need to go $5,000 more, doubling your deals doesn't make any sense. You don't need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But let's assume that that is the case and you want to grow this big business and that's cool. So the vision would to do 10 deals a month. What we found is we start talking about it and we start talking about it with our team and we start talking about it from a leadership perspective. Culturally, you're right within your business that you're saying, listen, guys, this is what this means. So in my organization, we talk about certain revenue numbers and we talk about certain deals and we want to do 3 starts and 3 handoffs a week. So that's basically 12 projects or, you know, 144 is what that would equal to over a year.
Uh-huh.
And so our team knows every single time we talk about it, it's 3 starts and 3 handoffs, but it also has to be on time, quality, and budget. And we cannot give up on time, quality, and budget to hand off a project because it's going to come back to our projects. It's going to be messed up. There's going to be a seller or a buyer who's upset. There's going to, you know, so when you start to look at the actual vision, you have to say, okay, so this week we might not do the equivalent of 10 deals, but we might, you know, going from 5, we might do 5.5.
Yeah.
And we might say, listen, acquisition guys, we're going to buy 2 more properties. We're not going to buy 10 more because we're not going to have so we're going to be overweighted. Now we can't, you know, we're getting eaten alive by the money of holding those things or by not having enough construction crews to jump on those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But you say, what does it actually take? So if we have 2 construction crews running and we can do 5 consistently, how many construction crews do we need? We need 4. Okay. Well, now we need to go find 2 more construction crews, but we don't have enough work for 4 to keep busy, but we could probably start keeping 3 busy or 2.5 busy. See what I'm saying? So
yeah.
we start to think about, and we're forward thinking because if it's always reactive versus proactive, you're never going to be able to scale up because you're always chasing the problem that you didn't solve instead of thinking about the problems that will be created by that.
I love that. And it's so true because there's so many people that even if they consider themselves visionaries, they don't have that forward thinking ability and or they just don't think about it, right? So like, okay, if we decide to take on these projects or ramp up our direct mail or take on, you know, buy X amount of properties, what are the problems that exist? Where are the operational inefficiencies? Like trying to see those things before they happen so that you can put measures in place is really, really important. And I think there's also something to be said, at least in my opinion, for, you know, sometimes you got to slow down in order to speed up. You know, growth isn't always the answer, at least maybe not at the point that you are in your business, right? You know, I think about LeBron James, you know, obviously, you know, he's been in the news a lot with his shift from the Cavs to the Lakers. You know, sometimes I watch games where he kind of will pace himself, you know, first quarter, sometimes depending on the flow of the game, second, third quarter. But when it's time for him to turn it on in the fourth, he turns it on. And that's kind of what I think about when I think of sometimes, you know, versus exerting all of your energy throughout the course of the game, I notice that sometimes he'll pace himself, right?
Yeah, I
think you can apply the same thing to your business.
I love that. I love that. There's one of my favorite books, and I'm pretty sure it comes out of this book, which is Extreme Ownership. And by the way, I'm actually reading this with my whole construction team right now. So we literally sat down in a job site that was actually under construction, and for an hour and a half, 4 grown men with their shoes off and sitting Indian style reading books and talking about leadership in the field. There's a story in there where they're talking about a bunch of Navy SEALs who were learning to climb a mountain, and the instructors, you know, just like amazing, you know, climbing up and down and helping, you know, these guys move forward. And several of the guys are like, oh my gosh, you know, this is so hard. And so he gave 2 directions. First of all, keep going, because if you sit there, you're going to fall off the cliff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And number 2 was slow is smooth, smooth is fast. And I just love that analogy of looking at a mountain and you're like, listen, you cannot fall down because you're going to get hurt or, you know,
right,
killed, obviously. And that if you're
yeah,
taking
game over at that point, yeah,
it's game over, baby. And so just like in your business, if you have big problems and you just sit there and don't do anything, it's going to blow up on you. But like you said,
can you say that again? You said the quote was, because I've never heard that, and it really resonated with me. You said, correct me if I'm wrong, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. That's awesome. Yep. I love that.
I do too. And I've used it a bunch of times in our business, and I remind myself too. So, and you can literally apply that to anything. So, you know, I recently bought a house with 11 acres and I've been running a chainsaw like every 3 days. You know what? I'm 37 and I, you know, this is the first time I've run a chainsaw more than an hour in my life. And you better believe there's serious consequences if you don't run that chainsaw slowly, smoothly. Make sure you know what you're cutting. Yep. You know, you go hacking something down, you're going to hack your foot off or your hand off or something.
Yeah.
So it's the same principle. And I love the LeBron example too, because you talk about somebody who is, talk about the top of the top of the top. So even that guy, he knows he can't do that the whole game, but he knows that, hey, I can help support my team. I can help, you know, lead the team, but then I can also turn on the afterburners when I need to and take over.
You know, so this particular episode, sometimes this happens and I absolutely love it because it's natural and it's organic, and we weren't intending to talk about leadership, but this is kind of the direction that the episode has taken. And I'm glad, because leadership is so, so important. And I know at some point we're probably going to talk about what it means to be the visionary in your business. You can't be a visionary if you don't have leadership skills. And, you know, we're talking about LeBron James and the Ferrari versus the Volvo or whatever it was. Like, talk to me about, you know, how you see leadership, maybe some of the things that you're focusing on to become a better leader. Because you're right, you know, again, we're talking about LeBron, and sometimes like that dude knows when he has to get his team involved, you know, versus when he has to attack and just take it over. And I really think that's applicable to our business. You know, we talk about slowing down to speed up. All of that falls, in my opinion, under the leadership umbrella. So like, I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts on just, you know, what does it mean to be a leader? What are you doing to become a better leader? And then just any examples or any stories that maybe pop up to you.
Sure. So one of the places that I've realized is if there's not an intentionality to whatever you're doing is, there things will happen that are outside of what you want. And so as a leader in your organization and as a visionary or CEO or, you know, president or whatever seat you sit in, and maybe you're not any of those things, but you're still wildly passionate about your business and you still feel you're a leader in that business. So what is the end game of this business, or what is our goal? What's our target? And then how are we communicating that to our team in a way that makes sense, is simple, they understand what the scorecard is.
Yep.
And then they also understand what it is about what they're specifically doing. You, Alex, what is your job, as the leader of this podcast, to have an end result that the people listening will get something and take away something. And if you haven't taken that into account, right, then people aren't going to listen to it. Or if you're leading your team in a business deal and they don't understand what it looks like to win, or like, you know, perfect example would be like an acquisitions guy in a business, where it's one thing to buy 10 houses. It's another thing to buy 10 good houses that meet all the criteria that you laid out, that they understand what the disposition is of them. They understand what the return on capital is expected of those deals. And then why are we actually buying those properties? And it makes all the difference.
That's right.
And I'm talking from experience here, by the way, because, you know, if you don't tell someone that, you know, but you're like, great, we bought more houses, but hey, guess what? What actually is this house used for? Are we holding it? Are we wholesaling it? Are we flipping it? And then, you know, does it actually make sense in the context of all those things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to get buy-in from your team. You know, you have to communicate the vision clearly. You have to make sure that everybody is in alignment with that purpose, those core values. Everybody understands where they fit on the accountability chart, what seats they sit in, what their roles and responsibilities are. So, man, leadership is just so critical, because.
But here's.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. Go ahead. You're good. I want to hear what you got to say, not me.
I think there's one critical piece that we often miss too as leaders. It starts with me. you know, it starts with me. And if I am not reading every day, I'm not journaling, I'm not centering myself on my team, I'm not making sure I'm clear on what my objective is, and I'm making a diligent daily effort and practice of leading your team, you are failing. Mm-hmm. You're failing. And I know this because when I do it, and I am reading and I'm thinking about it and I'm listening to other great leaders and I'm talking to friends and colleagues like yourself who have something to bring to the table, you cannot expect your team to step up as leaders, right? Because we need leaders in every level of every organization.
You nailed it.
And if you are not willing to put the time in yourself, you are full of it. I call the BS on it, and you need to, you know, make a decision if you want to be the leader or you want to have, you know, if that's really what you want.
Yeah. No, man, I kind of paused because I couldn't have said it any better. I don't really have anything else to add. I mean, I think you got to lead by example. And sometimes that means, you know, taking the game over and taking action. And other times that means letting your team fail forward, make mistakes, learn from it, you know, encourage them. It's so important that you understand the personality traits and what motivates, what moves, what's important to your team members. I think that's a critical component to being a leader that a lot of people don't even realize you're just necessarily focused on. It's not just about leading in a one particular way, but you know, you have to kind of pull different levers depending on who you're working with, or what type of setting you're in, what the outcome is. And I think that kind of, you know, to bring this full circle, it kind of speaks to what you were saying, Nathan, as far as getting crystal clear on what the business does, why it does what it does, what do you want to accomplish on a micro level, whether it's a daily, weekly, or monthly basis, and then clearly communicating that to the team.
Yeah, 100%. You used a word that I have been obsessed with for the last month or two. And so you used which levers to pull. And I am obsessed about this word and what it means in my business right now. So you mind jamming on that for a second?
No, yeah, man. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Like, elaborate on because, you know, you when you say you've been obsessed with it, like, what does that mean to you, and how are you kind of applying that in the business?
So when I think about levers, I was really thinking about this because I'm thinking, okay, so behind my name, Nathan Brooks, CEO, right? So CEO, what is the CEO of my business? I have this seat, and I have this opportunity to pull what would be considered a very large lever, right? I can pull the lever of money. I can pull the lever of people, capital. I can pull the lever of individual, you know, whether that's pressure or whatever it might be on that person, pressure or accountability or encouragement or whatever. So you start to think about those levers in your business. And so apply it to something that is, let's say you're moving a rock. Okay. And you have a giant lever and we're using just a very basic, you know, it's a 2x4 and a rock and you're moving a giant rock on the other side. Mm-hmm. One side's a cliff and one side's where you want it to go. So just because you have this giant lever and you can get it positioned in the right place and you can put it under that giant rock and you can lift it up, if you put it in the wrong direction or you apply the wrong amount of pressure, you're going over the cliff.
Yeah.
Right. Or you apply not enough pressure and you simply don't move the rock at all. And so I've been obsessed about this because I think about it and I think about, first of all, if you don't understand the type of person you are working with, so like we do a DISC profile for every staff person on our team.
Yep, same here.
You have to, right? You have to understand what is the personality of this person? Where are the levers that we can apply? Not in a weird way, not in a crazy way, like that we're manipulating people, but we're using their skills and we're using the things that we already have learned as the leader of those people, mm-hmm. as their boss or whatever you want to call it. And then how do you apply the lever? So for instance, it might be words of affirmation to somebody, hey, you did a great job. Or it might be somebody that literally needs to sit down and say, listen, Alex, bro, you yeah. really need to step it up.
Right.
I know you want to win. I think you know what it means to win. Let's talk about that and let's apply. And I can apply some pressure verbally in a way that gets you motivated. So when you think about the levers, and I think people really need to think about this, is what is the lever that you can use to get the result that you want, but you cannot under apply pressure and you cannot over apply pressure, because in either direction, it doesn't create the outcome.
Yeah.
Right?
I love
it. And sometimes it might be worse.
Dude, you nailed it, man. You nailed it. No, I think we're in complete alignment there. And I think the other thing, you know, to just quickly mention is that sometimes as the leader, part of being a leader is understanding how to get the most out of your team. And and sometimes it's, you know, you might, especially if you haven't gone through the steps of having each of your team members go through the DISC profile or Colby or Culture Index or some of these other ones. Sometimes it's about making sure that you set them up to succeed, right? Making sure that their unique abilities, their strengths, what they're not good at, they're in the right seat. You know, matter of fact, so we just got back from the Holiday Mastermind in Bimini, and one of the guys in there, I won't mention the, you know, too many details, but one of those dudes in there, like, their business is cranking. They're doing a couple hundred deals a year, and they haven't taken the time to go through DISC. And we were talking, like, you know, one of the breaks, I'm like, dude, imagine if you actually knew you know, the strengths, weaknesses, unique abilities of each of your team members, and you put them in the appropriate seat. Like, imagine what your business can do at that point. Like, you guys are crushing and you're not even 100% sure where some of your team members, you know, fall within the DISC or within Colby. So it's really powerful stuff, man, that you get to know your team on a deep and personal level as well. You know, so I think that's kind of the last point I wanted to, you know, to bring up about leadership and just as it relates to like your business and your team.
I love it.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So brother, let's kind of pivot here. As far as, you know, if you don't mind sharing, man, what does the rental portfolio for you guys look like today?
We just have a few dozen rentals, so we don't have, we don't have a huge portfolio. We actually had, you know, sold off quite a few, and,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, you go.
We're really focused on buying just kind of very specific rentals, but also just generating a lot of cash and just developing some additional coffers in our business and personally as well. So one of the things that we've realized is as you enter in these relationships with bankers, and there's a lot of different ways you can fund and hold deals, but the more bankable you are, the more able you are to you know, do other things within those rental portfolios. So that's kind of, we put a pause on the buying for, you know, about 6 months.
Okay.
And on the rental side, and are really just kind of focused right now on generating some more cash, and then we'll start buying again.
Got it. Is that to kind of set yourself up for what, you know, you think could be a you know, a shift in the market at some point here in the future? Or like, what's, I'd love to kind of talk, you know, strategy as far as that is concerned, like really having a cash reserve. If you don't mind kind of sharing the thought process behind that.
For sure. Well, I think that it's a hedge for certainly a market adjustment. It's also a hedge just in when you think about, you know, as our business has grown too, we needed to grow with it from that bankability standpoint. And we've gone through now a number of refinances with the banks and just looking at kind of what that what's sitting on your balance sheet and how much cash you have operationally in your business. And also just personally, I got to tell you, you know, 10 years ago, I couldn't have imagined having, you know, more than $1,000 sitting in my, you know, savings account. And, you know, today I, you know, it's five figures in my savings account. And I still feel, uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that, you know, as we grow as individuals and people, we also need to be thinking about our, the backstop. And the more successful we are and the more we make doesn't mean we need to go and blow a whole bunch of money. And I think you and I had actually talked about this, and I think you're pretty aggressive on not having debt. And so that was one of the things where we wanted to have less properties, but a lower leverage point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, being able to acquire more, you know, do more deals, have more money in savings personally and in a business, and just have that backstop where, you know, there are always opportunities and there are always market cycles. And I do believe at some point there will be a market cycle and a downturn, and that, you know, as a buyer, we'll be able to buy more properties and to be able to take advantage of that opportunity. So that's, you know, that's kind of what we're thinking about.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm right with you, man. Let me tell you, I've had conversations with people that are a lot smarter than me. You included, Nathan, several people at that IMN single family rental conference, guys that we're both, you know, connected with and friends with, that are part of, you know, the mastermind. And it's really interesting to get kind of people's take, but I think the common denominators that everybody understands, nobody knows exactly when it's going to happen, you know, but people are just positioning themselves to take advantage, because I forgot where I've heard this, and I've read it in a bunch of books and several people have said it, but I think more millionaires and multimillionaires are made in downturns and when the market's not doing well than when it is. So it's just understanding where we are in the market cycle and positioning yourself and in your business to be able to take advantage of that. So I think that's really interesting that you guys are, you know, kind of stacking cash at this point and just being more intentional and strategic about the assets that you do decide to take down.
Agreed. And here's the thing. I think if you're a mom and pop investor and you're buying a onesie twosie kind of deal, I would not be afraid. I would just be eyes wide open. And I think I wouldn't say it's not okay to buy right now, because we're still buying and I'm still, you know, picking up a rental here or there. So it's not, I'm not afraid of that. I'm just aware of that. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just like anything. So if you're a stock trader, you know, and you're not sure, you think there's going to be a downturn, you're not going to put a whole bunch of money going up. But if you're, you know, if you're a mom and pop investor, you can buy, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5, 10, you know, rentals, 20 rentals. If you have a, you know, married spouse or whatever, you can put it in 30-year money. The interest rates are still at a historically low place. Yeah. So I think, you know, there's a lot of opportunity with that 30-year money still. You just have to be thoughtful on it and understand, like, hey, I'm going to hold this for 5 or 10 years. You're going to be fine. And you're going to have a cash flowing asset, and you're going to be able to have something that is of value in, you know, all of the things that we all love about real estate. But you know, if you're a fix and flipper or you're, you know, buying in mass quantities, it's certainly something that you need to, you know, be thinking about.
Yep. Yep. No, I co-sign on that as well. And from just cause I kind of mentioned it, we don't have to get too deep into this, but I want to kind of ask you just a few questions about, property management. Are you guys, managing your, you know, your couple dozen rentals in-house, or do you guys have a property management company that, takes care of that for you?
So we had grown a property management company to, you know, about 140 doors under management. And we sold it last year, and we found that we were a lot better at rehabbing houses and selling houses and helping our turnkey clients invest their money and grow, you know, building wealth and freedom through real estate over a long term. But we weren't that great at property management. And so we have a number of real estate partners on the property management side that we work with on a daily basis. Uh-huh. And so that's kind of what we transitioned to.
Okay.
So yeah, we don't currently manage any of those now, but we have in the past, and I have personally managed mine that I owned, you know, prior to that as well. So
got it. Well, do you have any tips or any advice, questions that people need to ask when they're out there, you know, if they decide not to manage them themselves, or if they don't have a property management company, how do you go about finding, we can spend a couple minutes in this and then start to kind of wrap up the show, but how do you figure out, you know, interview the right, find the right property management companies? What types of questions do you need to be asking them? Because, you know, man, from, you know, and I'm starting to get into, you know, the single family rental portfolio game. And I've talked to you and several others, you know, vacancies and property management seem to be the two things that are going to make or break your portfolio. Right. So, what
in,
are some of those?
In the maintenance. Yeah,
yeah,
the,
exactly. Correct. Maintenance and property management. So what are what are some of the pitfalls, landmines, questions you need to ask property management companies to just make sure that you're in bed with the right one?
You know, I think it's important to understand their philosophy. So we kind of talked about culture and philosophy a lot in the beginning. And I think it's important to note, like, if this is not just a house, and it's really easy to think about it in the terms of a spreadsheet and the numbers and all that. But at the end of the day, you have to have a family or a person or, you know, couple or friends or whatever who want to call that place a home. Mm-hmm. and they want to live there, and they want to make that a home, and they want to be there. And we, as landlords, want to have them happy, content, understand the rules, make it better than what they, you know, they arrived at, or at least certainly not any worse. And they're there paying on time every month for a long time. And so how do we set the conditions for that? Well, we want to know, how do you vet a tenant? What are the criteria? What is the criteria for the qualification? And every market is different. So, you know, some places might be 3 times rent. Sometimes might be 2.5 times rent. Sometimes places might be, you know, more than that. What is it? Is there a credit score minimum? Is there, you know, do they go and look at their previous property? Do they actually drive to that property and look at where they live? Do they see how they actually live? Is it a pigsty? Is it nice and tidy? And then how are you pricing it? How are you marketing the property? You know, do you have a base of tenants or people who follow you online or otherwise? And how do you produce that tenant, and what is the timeline to place them?
Yeah.
How long does it take you to turn a property from the date that you have a vacancy to the date that you're placing that tenant? How do you manage during the period? How often are you in the property? How often are you doing inspections? What does the maintenance look like? Do you have a maintenance price sheet? Do you have inside maintenance, or do you have third party maintenance?
You're on a roll, man. Don't stop on my account. But you know what, as I'm listening to you speak, Nathan, you want your property management company to have immediate answers when you ask these questions, because if you're kind of interviewing them, asking them some of these questions, and they start kind of fumbling around and like, this is obviously a property management company that just doesn't have their stuff dialed in, and either hasn't dealt with that or just doesn't know what to do, and or they just kind of wing it. Either way, it's not the type of property management company that you want to associate yourself with.
100%. Yeah. 100%. You want to know what it looks like. And they cannot guarantee you you're going to have a tenant for, you know, 24, 36, you know, whatever months. They can't guarantee that. Don't ask them to guarantee that. You know, now, what is the length of the lease? Is it 12 months? Is it 24 months? You know, we've had a lot of success doing 24-month leases. And there's an upside and a downside to that. You know, you might have a market condition change where there's, you know, a pretty increase, you know, large increase in a rent amount, but you also have 2 years of no vacancy if you maintain and have a great tenant in that property. So there's a lot of things to think about. And I think those people who have properties, and you also want to just think about, it's not just the cash flow today. It's also making sure you, as that landlord, are saying, okay, what are all the things that, you know, like if we sell a turnkey house, for instance, we know that, hey, if it doesn't have a 10-year useful life, roof, windows, HVAC, plumbing, whatever, it's set. Mm-hmm. We're going to fix it, or we're going to replace it if it's not a 10-year useful life. And, you know, so, but if you're just going out there and buying a house, don't take the shortcut. You know, don't keep that 30-year-old HVAC in there. And you don't know any day, you know, is it going to turn around? Because that tenant's going to have a problem with it. And, you know, summer's going to turn around, it's going to be 95 degrees outside, and then all of a sudden you're going to have an upset tenant.
Yep.
So guess what? Instead, it says brand new HVAC, you know, stay cool this summer. Now you have a feature, and you have a CapEx item that you don't have to worry about. And when is this going to come up, and, you know, will I have a problem with it?
Right. So this is super, super useful information. I know it's going to help a lot of people that are either looking to build a portfolio or already have one. So, man, let's start to kind of wind it down here. That usually the last question I like to ask people that come on the show, and this is something I never prep them with. So, you know, I want kind of just the immediate answer that comes to the top of your mind. You're a young guy, 37 years old. I'm 38. If you were to rewind the clock 17 years, what's the one piece of advice you would share with the 20-year-old Nathan Brooks? This could be about business, or it could just be about life in general.
You know, there's a quote in that Extreme Ownership book that I love. And, you know, I was going to initially say a one word answer, but there was something that, his name is Jocko Willink, and I love this book. And one of the things he told his commanders under him was, in whatever situation, was relax, look around, make a call. And I think so often it's so easy to get for me, and I get wrapped up and get emotional about things, or screwed something up, or the deal hasn't turned out the way that you wanted it, or, you know, you can apply this to your life as a, you know, a parent, a spouse, or whatever. Instead of getting so amped up about everything, to relax and think about what the actual problem is, and then go back in and actually solve it, and don't keep making that same mistake. And I think a lot of times, you know, with, to that end, and in business, we try to solve problems by making it other people's problems versus making it our own problem and solving it.
It's really good.
And taking the ownership. And so, you know, I think it's that combination of our, you know, relaxing and de-stressing, de-throttling that emotional meter for ourselves. And by the way, it's a lot healthier to do that. I'm not saying I'm perfect at it, but I really am working on that in myself. Mm-hmm. And then also, you can't solve, you know, process problems in your business or whatever it is with, you know, throwing other people at it. You have to come at it yourself. You have to solve it. You have to understand the problem. You have to work through it. You have to own it. And then you're able to come out on the other side having actually solved it. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Brother, man, this has far exceeded my expectations. Always great jamming with you, dude. Where can people connect with you, find out more about you, your business, what you have going on? And yeah, man, like what's the best place to reach you?
I'll give you two. So we want to talk real estate and turnkey properties. We help clients all over the US and I think it's something like 7 countries or 8 countries.
Nice.
Yeah, we've worked with a lot of guys in the military as well. So it's really awesome, guys who are serving our country, getting to help them invest money and you know, building their wealth, freedom long term. And so bridgeturnkey.com is our website for our investment properties. And then you can just hit me up on Facebook and just Nathan Brooks on Facebook. And I appreciate a lot, Al.
Yeah, thank you, Nathan. And guys, as always, we'll have all these links and resources, that book that Nathan mentioned, we'll have all of that in the show notes page. And I encourage you to reach out to Nathan, man. Super cool, down-to-earth, genuine dude doing big things in his business. And, you know, that's just one of the reasons I wanted to have him on. So, Nathan, buddy, always appreciate you, man. I look forward to seeing you hopefully in a couple of months. And, yeah, man, keep rocking, dude. We'll connect soon.
You too, brother. Thanks so much for having me on.
Take care, guys. We'll talk soon.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.